Are you there?
Yes, hello.
Okay, well, welcome to KBOO.
Good to be with you.
Well, I've been hearing you. It was a great title for one of your recent books. Can you tell us again what that one was?
Jaded Tess, which is out, but I have one coming out in October called How to Overthrow a Fascist Regime on $15 a Day.
Well, that sounds good. can you give us a little rundown on that?
Well, certainly, yes. I've been running this website, WayneMatsonReport.com, since May of 2005. And basically what I saw here in Washington with the corporate media spinning nonsense stories, irrelevant stories, missing the big stories, spiking other important stories, and just twisting the truth is the thing that's missing here is something that existed in Washington for an awful long time, and it's the old Washington merry-go-round. First, it was a newspaper column. It was syndicated in about 1,000 newspapers. Of course, there were many more newspapers in those days because most cities had morning and evening editions, and mm-hmm. certainly several newspapers. But this was started by Drew Pearson, and Pearson mm-hmm. Passed away in 69, it was taken on by Jack Anderson. And between these two people and their staffs, they managed to help bring down Joe McCarthy. They helped expose Nixon during Watergate. Anderson did a lot of uncovering of Iran-Contra. But since the merry-go-round has left the scene, there's nothing really in this town to expose these criminals and hypocrites. So I thought it's something I wanted to try to transition over to the web, and so far so good. Mr. Pierce and Mr. Anderson, I face about one lawsuit a month, or threat of a lawsuit.
Well, I think Jack Anderson faced more than lawsuits, didn't he?
Yes, he was threatened with assassination mm-hmm. by some of the people involved with the Watergate plumbers. So certainly, yes, he faced more than just lawsuits. But I think he and Pearson were probably all together received about probably over 50 or 60 threats of lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, one of the stories that's coming out more now is about Scooter Libby. We've known he's long been a part of the neocon grouping, and now it turns out that he has been working for Mossad.
Yes, I reported that a week and a half or so ago. I have a lot of friends here in the intelligence community, and people think, all these people in the CIA and the National Security Agency and the FBI aren't to be trusted. But by and large, these people are patriotic. They also took an oath to the Constitution. They know what the law is, for the most part. There have been a number of rogues in all these agencies over the years, but a very very old and veteran CIA person told me when he saw Libby having his sentence commuted by George Bush, he said, well, he's a longtime Mossad agent. And it just, as a matter of fact, we've been keeping an eye on him for an awful long time. But it certainly fits in with Libby's past as the lawyer who helped arrange the pardon by President Clinton for Mark Rich, the American mm-hmm. fugitive based in Switzerland, who is known to have been a Mossad asset. As a matter of fact, the plea for the pardon of Mark Rich to President Clinton came none other from then Prime Minister of Israel Ehud Barak.
Mm-hmm. There is a distinction between an agent and an asset. Could you sort of tell
right.
us? An asset, well, an agent is someone who's actually in the pay of, in this case, it would be Mossad. An asset could be something a little bit different.
Well, certainly Mark Rich, he's a billionaire, so he mm-hmm. doesn't really need any money from mm-hmm. Mossad. So he's probably better off as an asset. But somebody like Libby, who's an attorney, has been an attorney here in Washington, most of these people do things for money, mm-hmm. and obviously they're not going to. A lot of them aren't going to do it for free, but a lot of this goes back to the Reagan administration and what occurred in the espionage case involving Jonathan Pollard, who's now serving a life sentence for spying for the Mossad. He was a naval intelligence employee. At that time, it was well known that he had a control officer somewhere in the Reagan administration. If we look back at that in those days, many of the leading neocons who were consulting with Bush or working for Bush with this debacle in Iraq were also key members of the Reagan administration, I should say, and they include people like Richard Perle, who was at the Pentagon. Scooter Libby worked at the Pentagon in those days. Paul Wolfowitz was over at the State Department. Douglas Feith had been at the National Security Council, but when he had a little problem with his clearance, he was transferred over to the Pentagon. So there were a number of people who were very suspect in their loyalties, who were thought of as potentially being this control officer. And we know from Yossi Melman's book, Every Spy a Prince. Yossi Melman writes for Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, very well thought of Israeli newspaper. He said that the person was known as Mega. So this control person even had a code name called Mega. There's always been a lot of speculation as to who Mega is, because we assume that the person is still alive and may be somebody who had a pretty high position in the Bush administration.
Yeah, one thing about Mossad, you know, I was reading Victor Ostrovsky's book, By Way of Deception. An interesting thing about Mossad is he says that actually, as far as employees goes, it's a pretty small outfit considering all the stuff they do, but they have quite a large number, I guess you could call them assets, people who sort of help them out in one way or another.
That's right. In Washington, of course, there's a number of organizations. We also know we had another, it's a pending trial of two individuals who work for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, Keith Weissman and Steve Rosen, who were charged with accepting classified information from a Pentagon intelligence officer named Larry Franklin. Now, that case was supposed to be underway. As a matter of fact, it was supposed to take place, the trial was supposed to take place the day after Libby's sentencing, but it got moved back. So we have a lot of activity involving Israeli intelligence here in Washington, and certainly the idea that the Mossad or its assets are a friendly intelligence agency. I go back to what was noted by various intelligence reports over the years, including some that were delivered to Congress, that Israel's intelligence is considered a hostile intelligence threat to the United States, along with China, Russia, and a few other countries. But when their agents are discovered in this country, as one was in the Larry Franklin espionage case, where he basically was delivering top secret code worded, very highly sensitive classified information to not only AIPAC, but it was assumed that an employee of the Israeli embassy who was identified as the chief Mossad agent in Washington was also involved. And he, of course, fled back to Israel. And I don't think he's been available as much as the FBI would have liked to have had him available for an interview. But this is how these things operate. When their agents are caught over here, normally it's hushed up, and they're either asked to go back or at least or maybe ordered to go back home. But there's usually no trial or anything.
So what's happening with that case? It seems to be stalled. Aren't they trying to make a free speech issue or something?
Well, they're trying to say, their lawyers are trying to say that merely receiving classified information is not a crime, and they're citing many journalists and people like myself who sometimes receive classified information. I think where they're kind of off is on this is, as a journalist, I sometimes get classified information, but I think where the line has to be drawn is if I use it in an article, that's one thing. But however, if I don't use it in an article and I were to pass it on to a known intelligence officer at an embassy here in Washington, then I would not be surprised to be named as a person receiving classified information with the intent of passing it on to a to a foreign intelligence agency, and I think in that case, the government would be right in prosecuting someone for
so
that.
So that's a crucial distinction. So
exactly.
What do we know about Libby's career with Mossad, anyway?
Well, I mean, he's got a long background with, what's called the neocons here in Washington, but he's worked closely with people like Douglas Feith and Richard Perle and the others, Wolfowitz, and those who aggregate around these neocon think tanks in his town, the American Enterprise Institute, and I should add Michael Ledeen, who's with the American Enterprise Institute, John Bolton, is with the AEI, and he certainly did everything possible to carry forth the Israeli government's policies while he was our UN ambassador, and before that when he was at the State Department in charge of international arms control. But anyway, they've got a huge influence operation here in Washington that includes AIPAC, includes these neocon think tanks. I mentioned AEI, but also there's the Hudson Institute, there's the Heritage Foundation, and there's the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which was very active in sending people over to the Pentagon to work in this Office of Special Plans, which was under Douglas Feith that helped create the phony intelligence that got us into this debacle in Iraq.
Well, can you tell us a bit about Mark Rich? Now, when Scooter Libby was pardoned, and of course, the Democrats protested that, and then the reply from the Republicans as well, what about Clinton pardoning Mark Rich? But actually, it's not like they're in opposition. They're sort of part of one big operation, I guess.
Yes, I thought the Republicans were highly hypocritical because they didn't really want to talk about Mark Rich. Who was Mark Rich and who was his attorney? Well, his attorney was in fact Scooter Libby, and Libby was using his influences with people in the Clinton administration to arrange for him to be pardoned. Now, Clinton afterwards, in retrospect, said had he to do it over again, he would have never pardoned Rich. But remember, Clinton had been really pummeled with this Monica Lewinsky affair, and he was rumored to be friendly with Mark Rich's ex-wife Denise Rich, and it's assumed that there was pressure brought by her on people to help arrange the pardon. But certainly Libby was very much involved in that whole pardon because he was the attorney for a man who was who fled the United States rather than face trial. And this man Rich has been involved in smuggling and sanctions busting, involvement with some of the world's worst regimes, the Iranians under the Ayatollahs. He was selling Iranian oil in violation of an embargo. He sold he was involved in selling things to apartheid South Africa and a number of other countries. So this man is more like the kind of villain you would find in a James Bond movie. And here we had Scooter Libby as his confidant and attorney.
Speaking about Clinton, I've been hearing for quite a while was that that Monica Lewinsky was somehow associated with Mossad. Now, is there anything to that, or is that just some kind of a scurrilous rumor?
I don't know. I mean, I doubt it. I think Monica Lewinsky was somebody who obviously was put in her position because people she was close to had donated generously to the Clinton campaign, and this was sort of like, well, we'll get her a job at the White House. I from what I gathered from my observation of Monica Lewinsky, I don't think she wouldn't pass the test to be any kind of intelligence asset.
Okay.
I think especially the Mossad is very careful on who they use.
That's true.
That's not to say they don't use women. Mm-hmm. Many intelligence agencies use women to entrap people for purposes of blackmail, but usually the women they use for that purpose are a little bit more street savvy.
Right. They're pretty smart and pretty tough. Well, I think Monica Lewinsky lives in the Portland area now.
If
I ever get a chance, we could. But anyway, so this is just kind of a You know, she's been called all sorts of things, and this is just sort of a, nothing much to it as far as we know.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned in your article, it's in the Op-Ed News, so people want to read this article, they can go to opednews.com, and it goes into quite a bit of detail. One person you mention is Paul Klebnikov. And he was a Moscow editor for Forbes magazine who was killed. Can you tell us anything about that? That's been a sort of an intriguing item that it seems to have dropped out of sight.
Well, that's right. Yes, Klebnikov had been a person who had written extensively about this man, Boris Berezovsky. He's a Russian tycoon who, along with Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was jailed by Putin, basically helped loot the Soviet treasury and got involved in all kinds of schemes. And now he's in exile, courtesy of the Labour government of Britain. He lives in London. He, of course, his name came up in the poisoning of this guy, Alexander Litvinenko, who the Brits are saying, it was Russia that did it, but Litvinenko was not a very sympathetic figure. He supported the Chechen guerrillas and this whole polonium aspect. They tried to say that he was poisoned by the SVR, which is the follow-on to the old KGB. Mm-hmm. He was poisoned because it was a retaliation by Putin. I don't think so. I think basically Klebnikov had identified Berezovsky as basically not an honest tycoon, but somebody who had been involved in all kinds of illegal and fraudulent activities in Russia, and now he's on the lam. But one thing that's common with these Russian tycoons is many of them carry Israeli passports, because either they are Russian Jews, or they claim to be. When it's in some cases, they aren't. But it's a convenient way to avoid prosecution. Certainly, Berezovsky, who is being prosecuted by Vladimir Putin's government in Moscow, fits that bill. He's not the only one. As a matter of fact, a former Treasury Department official under the Clinton administration said that there are about 75 of these mobsters who are running around the world with Israeli passports who are Russian citizens.
And, well, of course, aren't a number of them in the United States? I mean,
some are in the United States. Mm-hmm. Others are in Britain, as I mentioned. But this is a network that is one that really bothers me, because as I referred to James Bond villains earlier, this is a multinational network of these people. They're arms smugglers, diamond smugglers, and I believe that Valerie Wilson and her Brewster Jennings operation was really looking at the involvement of these networks in proliferation of WMDs, especially to countries like Iran, AQ Khan's network in Pakistan, and others. And I always felt that Joe Wilson, although he was a target of Bush and his cronies, that they really wanted to expose Valerie Wilson's network, because it could potentially get very close to some key allies of Vice President Cheney and George Bush.
Well, that is interesting. But yeah, that was her task, was sort of exposing these undercover arms deals. And,
well, that's right. Uh-huh. And you know, connecting the dots, and that's what intelligence officers do. I mean, they look for conspiracies, and that's a bad word. Where they use this conspiracy word, it's supposed to be some sort of pejorative word, but I understand that Valerie Wilson spent much time in Turkey, and we know that Litvinenko, when he left Russia, came out through Turkey. He had involvement with the Chechens, and then we have polonium involved. Well, these are the components. This is a component for a WMD. So the fact that her area of interest, Turkey, Iran, and other places, and we know that Mark Rich was involved in smuggling and sanctions busting with Iran. I think the CIA connected these dots, and I think Mr. Cheney and Mr. Libby and their friends really were worried and wanted to roll her operation up, and they did it successfully. And Bush commuted the sentence of Libby for his for his deeds, misdeeds, but Bush thinks that what he did mm-hmm. was a good thing. And yesterday Bush said it's time to move on.
Well, what is the chance that more of this will come to light?
Well, it's increasingly difficult to report the news here in Washington because you know, you've got the corporate media filters you've got to get through, and the other problem is I like Anderson, Jack Anderson, and Drew Pearson, and now running basically a record of having a one lawsuit threat per month. Now I'm going to live with that, but these are intimidation tactics to try mm-hmm. to keep people quiet, and you know, these people have unlimited time and resources to carry out these threats. So, but as I say, it's, all I can do is just keep talking to people on background. I have a lot of sources in the intel and law enforcement communities here, and I just will continue to be their echo chamber.
Well, are there any other people sort of pursuing this? I know in Washington, Sam Smith's Progressive Review.
Oh, Sam, Sam, I know. He's a good friend. And, mm-hmm. yeah, there are other people here. There's people around the country that are trying to do this. And as long as we have Internet, we can get the truth out there. But I just have a gut feeling that this administration is probably working with telecom industries and other high-tech industries to try to limit access to the Internet and create a two-tiered Internet where there'll be one Internet with a lot of advertisements and whatnot, and there'll be the other one that'll cost so much money that people will be they'll find it financially restrictive to try to access it. And I think there's been a lot of talk about that, but we deal with what the, you know, to paraphrase Rumsfeld, we'll deal with the internet we have and not the internet that the neocons want us to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have the Wayne Madsen Report. How can people access that?
WayneMadsenReport.com. That's mm-hmm. all together. I've just recently gone over to a subscription site, but I do have a public page where I have commentary and links to news articles. And if people want to read the articles that I write, it's a very small charge of $7 a month or $30 a year, which is actually a better deal.
Well, that's pretty good. Okay, we've been talking with Wayne Madsen, who the editor of the Wayne Madsen Report, investigative reporter, and I hope we find out more about Louis Libby, and this whole network that seems to be operating. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Good to be with you.
And this is Per Fagerang, KBOO News and Public Affairs. Stay tuned. I think next we will be talking to Antonia Juhas.